your host, Danny Fernandez. And today, I've replaced Iffy with three other hosts, all here. Voices that you have heard before and one that you haven't. And that one would be the host of Dark Five on Amazon. It is Rachel Evans.
Hello.
It's your first time here.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here.
You were covering WWE, and you are... Yeah. Very heavily involved in that world. So
very
I
much.
Knew I was like, oh, if I'm going to pull her on, it's got to be for this one.
It honestly, this is the only thing that I think I have expert knowledge in. And that's saying a lot. Expert Ooh. Is a lot, but I've put in my 10,000 hours.
Hell yeah.
I've been watching since I was a baby. Yes. Like, I feel confident.
Good, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the other thing I would say, I feel like you're an expert in horror. Like, you actively have horror shows.
Yeah, that's true. My whole show on Amazon is about...
Yeah.
well, no, I mean, but that's about even then, serial killers and stuff like that. Yeah. If we want to talk about serial killers, I could do that too.
Okay.
Yeah, or okay. Chaos magic.
Perfect.
Yeah.
We'll bring you on for one of those.
Keep that in the hat. That's awesome. That's really cool.
Another voice that you are hearing that you have heard before on our Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode, she is the host of Tights and Fights. It's Danielle Radford.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
How long have you had your Tights and Fights podcast for a while now?
Oh, geez. Yeah. I believe we started doing that, gosh, in the summer of 2016,
That's
maybe?
Right.
Wow,
yeah.
it's been
Yeah, it really has been that long. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
And that other voice you'll recognize from our Women in Gaming episode, she is a gamer, RPG player herself, and a gaming coach, Chanel Santa Cruz.
Hi, thanks for having me, especially with this like awesome group of women. This is fantastic.
Well, you all have had wrestling podcasts and like been so heavily involved in the wrestling world. Mm-hmm. I just knew... The three of you like popped into my head as people that I wanted to have on.
That's
if I was going to have
a compliment.
Anyone mansplained to me, I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be from y'all. So I wanted to start out because Rachel, you said that you were introduced to wrestling at a young age. Like, what is your first memory? Who were some of the first wrestlers that you remember? Before we totally dive into the history of it, just what is your first memory?
My very, very first memory of wrestling is I think I was probably around like 3 or something, because I watch it with my dad since I was born. He would just like sit on his lap. Was a Bruno Sammartino, which is a deep cut. Mm-hmm. But it's my dad's favorite wrestler. But my like personal first memory of wrestling is really tragic, actually. It's Owen Hart's
that death. We will get into that, because that was my first pay-per-view.
That was my first memory that I can see it still.
Wow.
It's horrific, and we will talk about it.
Okay,
but,
Danielle, what was your first memory of wrestling?
So it was, you know, wrestling was kind of always in the background when I was a kid, because this is when Trash Heap Hulk Hogan was huge.
Yikes.
And wrestling was just kind of in the zeitgeist. I did not start watching it until the Attitude Era and the Monday Night Wars were well underway with a bunch of friends of mine, because they started watching and I was like, what is this thing? And then it was the episode where an undead zombie monster takes the owner of the company's daughter and puts her up on a fake crucifix. And I was watching it and I said, oh, this is comic books.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm super into this. And that's when I started watching. And again, yeah, my first pay-per-view experience was Over the Edge.
Oif.
You know, it's also a horrible name.
It is, right? Because I feel, I think I've made this point before, but I feel like anime and wrestling, it has like a Venn diagram.
Oh, yeah. Dragon Ball Z for sure. Yeah.
So much of it. Moves come from anime as well. Like, you'll see more than a few people in the WWE, like Hadouken.
Oh, totally. I see them doing the Ginyu Force dance all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's all build up until, the actual fight. It's totally Dragon Ball Z.
People in spandex. Janelle, what is your first memory of wrestling?
Well, it's funny because my first memory is Danielle's also, but my interpretation of that same incident was very soap opera-esque. So I grew up with my mom is one of 10 kids, so I have like 30 plus cousins, and so we grew up just watching and wrestling each other all the time. But that moment where The Undertaker kidnapped Vince McMahon's daughter, somebody named Stone Cold Steve Austin came in to save the day, and
my word,
I died. I was like, I was probably like 6, 7 years old at the time, and I just remember seeing that, and it was just so like, the hero, like he came and even though he hated Vince McMahon, he was going to save his daughter because it was the right thing to do. And so that was, it's really funny that we have like the same moment as our first.
spit beer on me when I was 9.
Oh my God.
What an honor. What an honor. My first, even though I never got into it as much as y'all have, my first memory, I think, would honestly be middle school. My little brother was obsessed with wrestling. He would pile drive into my pillows.
Don't try this at home.
Yeah, he was obsessed with The Rock. So I feel like that was my introduction. But I was also aware of Stone Cold Steve Austin, John Cena. But yeah, my little brother just gravitated to The Rock so much. He would do the eyebrow, the people's eyebrow. So that was like always on our television. Yeah, so I guess that was my first memory.
That's awesome.
Before we hop in, just talking about how it got started. So the WWE name also refers to the professional, and of course that changed, but it refers to the professional wrestling promotion that was founded by Jess McMahon and a guy named Toots. Love that. That used to be a name. Toots Mont.
It's all old Carney stuff, man.
I know. Love it. Bring back Toots. Where's that name?
I'm sure there's a Toots out there in the wrestling world.
That's a great wrestler name. Yeah. No wonder he went into it. So Toots.
I mean, we haven't had a Toots gimmick before. I mean, assigned to a poor woman. That we love very much. Natty Hart had a toot gimmick where she
She farted.
Oh, that was her thing.
I thought you were talking about Sarah Logan in the what's the driving show? Ride along. Yeah, she farted in the car and like hotboxed it. Anyway,
that's probably why they don't pick the name Toots anymore.
Yeah,
that's probably why.
So that was in 1952 as the Capital Wrestling Corporation. So McMahon, who was a successful boxing promoter, began working with Tex Rickard in 1926. And with the help of Rickard, he began promoting boxing and wrestling at Madison Square Garden. So this ended up becoming, once they formed this wrestling corporation, essentially that's eventually what we came to know as the WWF and then eventually the WWE. Mm-hmm. Does anyone want to just explain what happened there with the WWF?
So, well, and it was, for a while it was the WWF, and then when Vince McMahon took over from his dad, who was also Vince McMahon, he began buying up all of these little territories and companies.
Yeah, so what he did about that, because this is really interesting, like this point of it I think is super interesting because it will never be the same again because of what they did. So basically what happened is that there was a top guy in each region, and that top guy would travel around to each region, and there would be jobbers or there would be mid-carders that would just kind of stay in their regions, but these top guys, they would all travel around. What the McMahons did was go to each region and say, hey, you could be in one place, you could be in one company, and we'll take care of you. And so he took all the top guys, put them in one organization, and then everything else failed.
Yeah.
Because there was all jobbers, and then the jobbers went to the WWF.
Yeah. And so then that's when it became WWF. And the reason it had to become the WWE was in early 2000s.
Yes,
the certainly. WWF is the World Wildlife Federation.
Yeah, that's y'all.
And so they successfully sued in England saying, we're tired of people confusing our sweet, sweet pandas with this. And this was during a particularly raunchy point in WWE's history.
Oh, do you think that's why they won?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I think the idea was like their brand was being sullied. Mm-hmm. And there was some pretty
It was during the time, the Attitude Era, which is when they were doing like, you know, bra and panties matches where women were just snatching, you know, in order to win, you had to declothe the other woman. Like that was happening back then. And it was just a lot of cursing, a lot of, you know, just even just racial storylines. It was just very, very, if I were, you know, running a panda organization, I wouldn't want my name to be sullied by that either. Like, fair enough.
And so that's when it went from WWE, which is World Wrestling Entertainment, which, let's be real, is a better, I think, name.
Yes, I agree. Because it really encompasses their sort of this, the way that they kind of went around and absorbed all of these other territories and you know, promotions.
It also solidifies the idea that it's sports entertainment to get them out of the legality of being an actual sports organization.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sports entertainment.
Yeah.
So can you talk to me kind of about the legacy of the McMahons? Because they've been involved for so long. Are they kind of seen as villains sometimes or what? I mean, that's just from an outside point of view.
They're the mafia. They're the mafia. They are the Donald Trumps of
absolutely.
Like
and they're friends.
They're
too.
Friends. Yeah, they're good friends. I mean, best like friends. With, yeah, to with think Donald of Trump. Them that way is like they're the modern day monarchy. I know that there's monarchies not in America. Hi, I'm in America. but yeah, no, like they're definitely a nefarious organization. But that being said, why look at me? I'm an apologist. I was about to be like, they're just carnies. They're just old school carnies. But mm-hmm. at this point, like the actual McMahons of it all or have transcended that.
And mm-hmm. I do think that's an important point to make about wrestling is that it did start, you know, there's so much terminology. It's all carny talk because wrestling really began to get big at carnivals. And mm-hmm. that's why when, you know, that's why you can have someone named Toots who helps get things off the ground. And so that's why when we do so much of this weird wrestling terminology, because it really is its own language, and we talk about, you know, marks and smarts and, mm-hmm.
and jobbers and all these little, these weird phrases or terminology.
Yeah, it all comes from when it was carny stuff.
Okay, so the Golden Age, which is the 80s, were y'all still, I mean, that was before... Yeah, we were born, but do you go back and watch? Like, did you go back and watch those? Like, what are some moments that people, who are some like famous or groundbreaking wrestlers during that time?
It was a lot of just big powerhouse type men back then. It was just
giant types,
very slow. The wrestling was very, very slow. You know, it was a time when Ric Flair was on top. Ric Flair was kind of the... so he's called the Nature Boy because this whole thing was like the guy who's got the bleach blonde hair, and there was lots of Nature Boys, but he was the Nature Boy. And so again, like you had all your Hulk Hogan's and your Ultimate Warrior, and so it was very slow wrestling. So it is kind of funny to go back because you can kind of appreciate the storylines, but also you're like, ooh, yikes.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan, not a good wrestler.
No,
but yeah, so there's
a lot of blood.
There's a Randy Savage was during that point.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what most people think iconically of wrestling mm-hmm. Comes from that early 80s period.
It was the golden age of blading, which is when you cut yourself open with a small razor blade for the dramatic effect of the match. It's like, oh, busted me
open.
And
you do it on the forehead because that's where it bleeds the best.
Yeah, just do tiny, tiny, tiny cuts so that when you get hit in the head, they mm-hmm. bleed out.
And Abdullah the Butcher actually has a slot in the middle of his forehead where he's bladed so many times he can stick a quarter in there.
Yeah, a lot
Look
of the
time. Devon Dudley.
Devon
Dudley's face is, I mean, he's wonderful and I love him very much.
Yeah, he's
but
great.
But their foreheads are just, yep, it's just very, very deep, deeply cut.
Yeah, now that we have HD, we can really see death by 1,000 cuts, literally. Yeah.
To be honest, like, you know, I prefer wrestling now. I think like
hard same.
I think you'll see a lot of people, especially people who used to watch but don't watch anymore, refer to that as the golden age. And then what you hear mostly though is the Attitude Era is the best era in wrestling.
That's kind of where we grew up. That's why.
Yeah.
I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So wait, do you think, because on here it just says this is the golden age, but is that just something people have equated? Like, because mm-hmm. when I think of golden age, I think like, oh, the golden age of comics. Like that's just an accepted term.
Yeah.
Are mm-hmm. you saying people are just like nostalgically adding like, oh, that was the golden days?
Yeah. Okay. This isn't like how, you know, in comics they do, they're broken up by decades. So there is like, you know, the golden age, the bronze age, the silver age. It's not, I would say with wrestling, it's not really like that. That's just something that someone, mm-hmm. It's a nostalgia trip.
For sure.
So would you say that some of the wrestlers from the 80s, though, like can you see how they influenced the next generation? And like, who would you equate that to? Like, is there someone that you can point out that like, oh, he clearly influenced this wrestler?
Well, a huge one right now is Piper, Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
He was huge. If you ever saw They Live, he was in that. He did a few mm-hmm. movies. He always, his big thing was Piper's Pit, which was a conversational talk show style way to further along storylines. Yeah. There are so many of
those. Can you give me an example? Like, he would, like, sit there and...
Yeah, he would do a segment, like a sketch. He would do a sketch, essentially, in front of, like... They would have a set, and he would, you know, and talk to a, you know, bring on a wrestler, and just they would just end up, like, yelling at each other because, you know, they're going to fight.
So just a way to further storylines. And now,
he had, like, a Mari situation?
Yeah, they had a barbershop.
He had, like, Jerry Springer.
They do that now.
They do that now, yeah.
And they had a barbershop also, which was really funny. Just thought about Shawn Michaels going back to Roddy, Ronda Rousey,
right?
Actually, super influenced by Roddy Piper,
yeah.
And so she actually was going by Rowdy Ronda Rousey, and she would come out. The first time she showed up on WWE, she was wearing his leather jacket,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's definitely somebody who was influenced heavily by somebody from the 80s. Mm-hmm. Trying to think of,
I think like Andre the Giant is an easy one because any big man,
yes,
like they literally have an Andre the Giant like. Memoriam mm-hmm. match,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, no. Any big guy that choke slams, it's an Andre the Giant move.
Yeah,
yeah. Can you talk about some of the before we move on to the next era? Can you talk about some of the popular moves that were in the 80s?
I would say choke slams were super popular mm-hmm. just because like big, it was the rise of the big man.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Hogan's crappy leg drop.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was a lot of rest holds, a lot of just, you know, interlocking and the, you know, just strength checks and where you just can't grab each other's arms and try to see who's stronger, you know, and some power bombs, which is where you pick them up and just kind of lay them flat on their back.
Yeah.
I feel like DDTs were kind of big back
then. Which is where you just kind of, you grab their head underneath your armpit and just kind of go down.
I'm trying to like picture one chop and I can't.
I can't think of any chops.
No chops.
Then. But so something important that is a wrestling move that's out through all wrestling is when we refer to as a bump. And that is literally when someone has to, you know, when you get hit and you have to fall and you land flat on your back, flat back, there is a way that you have to do that so that everything takes the brunt of it all at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you have to like, you fall back
distribute
into it.
All mm-hmm. The slam throughout. Yeah.
And there's a way to bump. There's a way to bump that when you can jump off of a 25-foot cage and you can bump and you're not going to be great, but you won't be dead.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about some of the training that goes on behind this, because that ended up being, I do remember, I don't know when the first one, I'll have to look it up, but they ended up televising that. Like, that became a whole thing to, like, be in a house and be being trained and, like, to be...
Tough enough.
Tough
enough. And then there was also that show on MTV that, like, MTV Seth Rollins was on, like, something.
That's
something.
How a lot somebody of wrestlers make their living post career is they train, you know, other people. And that's because WWE historically doesn't take care of the wrestlers after they've retired. There's no, because they're independent contractors. They're
sounds
not,
like the NFL.
Totally. almost worse.
Worse.
Yeah, honestly worse.
There's no federal regulation, so it's much worse.
Yeah, there's no union. There's no
there's no
retired
union.
No, they're not allowed to
unionize. But they...
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
We talked about Roddy, and he was on the outs. Like when he was like 45, he had to go back and go wrestle because he couldn't afford to live.
Yeah.
I feel like as entertainers, they should be allowed to be in an entertainment union.
I agree. They should be. Yeah. They should be part of SAG.
Yeah. Honestly. They should be SAG. Yes. They're on TV.
Or
like,
a stunt
that doesn't make sense.
Or something.
It would make sense, but you know, you're not dealing with. You're dealing with the mafia. Like they don't care.
Yeah. They did in the 80s. There was a big movement to unionize, and once again, proving what a trash heap he is, Hulk Hogan helped bust that open.
Yes.
Gotta love the guy. I do think I have to think. That AEW, it's a new promotion that is pretty much the only promotion to directly like say WWE, we can take you. They're offering healthcare, and I have to think with this new wave of people dropping like flies from the WWE, like is that Sasha thing real?
Who knows, but at the same time, you know, so there are. Right now, it reminds me a lot of the Monday Night Wars, which is a huge part of the Attitude Era, where, as they called him, Billionaire Ted, as Ted Turner decided that he wanted to really put his money behind the wrestling programs that they'd already had.
Who's Ted Turner?
Ted Turner is in the billionaire. He owns all the super stations.
Okay.
Cable guy, yeah.
Cable guy.
Turner TV, yeah.
Yeah, so he... decided he'd already had some wrestling, so he decided he was going to rebrand it and make it edgy. And that was a period where you would see people kind of, because that was one of the first real big challenges to WWE's kind of monopoly. And so you would see people go back and forth from those companies. And we're starting to see some of that now with New Japan and AEW is another contender, where if you're unhappy at WWE, there's a chance that you could go and leave and really make your mark somewhere else. And then, of course, inevitably come back when you're tired of doing that.
And we've already seen it, like, it's proven. Like, the WWE's veteran star, Chris Jericho, he's been around for 20 plus years, is now one of the main faces of AEW. And he's championing. Like, Jim Ross, who's a legend on the mic.
It's a commentary guy. Yeah.
Going to be on commentary.
Have you ever heard, by God, he's broken in half?
He was the voice of the Attitude Era. It was him and Jerry the King Lawler. But going back to All Elite, and this company has been started by stars who never went to WWE, stood strong in the face of money being thrown in their face, and they were
Cody.
No, Cody left. Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, who are stars of New Japan and Ring of Honor. And New Japan and Ring of Honor are these independent, you know, quote unquote companies, but they work together because they built this machine very, very strong against to hold up against. And so now you have people that are, they're just totally, you know, they have a chance to make a living outside of WWE now because of this place.
And WWE is quaking. They feel it. For the first time ever. They're kicking people out of WWE shows that are wearing AEW merch.
So just wrapping up a little bit more on this era, there was the introduction of Saturday Night's Main Event on NBC in 1985, and that marked the first time that professional wrestling had been broadcast on network television since the 1950s. I don't know what is going on with y'all's schedule. I feel like it's always wrestling all the time, but sometimes it's really important wrestling, and then other times it's... So I guess we'll get into that.
We have a big four. It's like, every 3 months there's one big one that we all kind of, and then once a year in April we have the big one, which is the Super Bowl, which is WrestleMania.
And then weekly there are at least 5 or 7
and we
or 12
don't,
shows.
We don't make ourselves watch all those because a lot of it is just filler content, and it's just, you know, it's just time for them to make money with advertisers because they're just trying to fill as much TV time as possible to get the advertisement money.
I don't know. I watch all of it.
I watch.
I hate myself. You know.
You know. I watch it on Hulu. But the thing is, I don't like that they take the beats out of important matches, and I'm like, oh, I can't.
So
I just keep it on while I'm working.
I was going to say the first WrestleMania was in 1985 and has since produced 35 editions. Really thought it would honestly be more than that, but that's what we're at right now. So the next one will be WrestleMania 36.
Yeah, where is that?
Florida. They're going back to Florida.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not going.
We're never getting one. We're never going to get one. I'm so mad.
Oh,
I barely got a Rumble.
We have to take a quick break, but then we're going to hop into the history of WrestleMania, and then we're going to hop into the Attitude Era right after this. And we're back. So if you had to explain WrestleMania to someone that has never watched wrestling, which might be people listening, how would you describe WrestleMania?
Roman Coliseum gladiator matches.
It's like the Super Bowl meets exactly what Danielle
said. Once a year event. So this is, that's why it's everybody goes crazy for this. This year, how long was it? We had like 7 hours. Pre-show. It went 7 hours. It's like, it's the Oscars and the Super Bowl. It's just this total crazy event.
It's basically the culmination of everything that they've been working up to.
And
that
year's worth of storylines.
And that takes place on a Sunday. And then the Monday after is the first TV episode of the new wrestling year. So the new wrestling year starts after WrestleMania, and that's when new storylines are introduced and new people are brought up into the company.
Super fun.
So one thing about wrestling, unlike sports or television or most things, particularly with WWE, there are no seasons. So people work and work and work until they have time off or until they get injured. And so the closest you could come to saying that's when a new season would start would be with the Monday after after WrestleMania. But yeah, there's no seasons. There's no days off.
No, and this is a problem with the not having a union because these people had to work on Christmas. They didn't get to be with their families this past year because Vince McMahon decided he wanted to have a Christmas episode. And that's not okay because these people, they hide the fact that they're injured because they don't want to be off TV. Right. They don't want to disappoint the boss.
Oh, if you talk to wrestlers, I mean, it's incredibly sad. It's like, I've never spent a Halloween with my son. Yeah. You know, I've never been there for my wife's birthday. Mm-hmm. It's, oh, her birthday is on a Tuesday this year. I guess it's
they get to go home for 2 days a week, maybe.
Yeah, 2 days a week. And if they're overseas, then not that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because they basically just circle the globe.
I want to say something for everyone listening. We all know, all of us are friends with professional wrestlers. Like all of, even me, who am not in this world, I did a show at Geek & Sundry with Xavier Woods, who's from New Day.
Comedy and wrestling and then, run very similar.
Yeah, comedy and wrestling. And then I've done a bunch of shows with Dolph Ziggler, who I know as well, and I know his brother, too. Yeah. So like, yeah. So when you hear people saying... you know, and these women know even more wrestlers than I do. So it's not, they're just not making this up. They know a lot of them intimately, have worked with them and worked on projects with them as well. So I just wanted to say that as opposed to like, when you're like, no, they're sad. It's like, oh no, we know,
Excuse me, on Reddit, I read this one thing.
It's,
you know, and it doesn't, we don't want to make it sound like we're super, it's LA. Everyone knows everyone. Yeah. But most that's importantly, Chris Jericho.
We were both on a thing with Jericho.
Yep.
Remember so we've worked with them, and so I didn't mean that. I just want, you know, because somebody's gonna be like, how do you know? And it's like, we've worked with so many.
They're
of
our
them.
Friends.
It's definitely not a secret that, you know, we're friends with these
All you
people.
Have to do is go to your Instagram.
Yeah.
And
there you go. We tell everybody. But Jericho, so that was somebody who was a very, very prominent player during the Attitude Era, which is the next one that you wanted to talk about, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So in between that kind of Hulk Hogan big heyday of the 80s, there was this weird moment where suddenly all wrestlers had a separate occupation. So be like, I'm a wrestler, but I'm also a dentist.
Love
in the
it.
Ring.
Gimmick, yeah.
Yeah. Like that would be their gimmick. You know, I'm a wrestler, but I'm also an accountant.
Exactly. Yeah. That was Bray Wyatt's dad. That's
Bray Wyatt's dad. Yeah. And so
I'm
it was
a wrestler,
this...
but I'm also an man.
Yeah. That one was, well, the weirdest one was Val Venus, who, I'm a wrestler, but I'm also a porn star.
Yeah. And so during that.
Seven, by the way.
Yeah. That era was kind of when wrestling was considered to be kind of lame. And then that is when, you know, and a lot of the wrestlers in WWE were starting to get a little bit older. People were getting bored. And that is when Billionaire Ted came in and decided to inject some new life into it.
Oh, yeah, this
it
is when Val Venus
WCW.
Came up with this porn star gimmick.
Yeah, yeah. And so he started taking a lot of WWE's bigger, older talents, like Hulk Hogan and all these other guys, and bringing them over to him. But that also meant that younger dudes got a chance to rise now that these older talents weren't kind of keeping them down.
You mean people that could move, like the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, who is my favorite wrestler of all
really?
Time.
Really?
I love Shawn. Oh, he's evil, by the way. He's considered, he's very evil. He did a lot of drugs back then, made a lot of poor choices.
He's better now. Jesus.
He's better now. Jesus. He found Jesus. But this was a time where people who were not 7 feet tall could actually, you know, and Shawn Michaels is considered a small guy, and he's like, he's 6'2". He used to play football, but he was somebody who, by stature, like, you know, you put him next to a Hulk Hogan, like, he looks, you know, small, quote unquote. So this was a time when a lot of people, they seized this opportunity to show that they weren't just going to be, you know, locking up, and the storylines got a little raunchy, and it was pretty wild back then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The flippy dips started coming out. The Eddie Guerreros, that, like, the people who.
The luchadores, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People who started to introduce. So there's a very particular WWE style, and it's actually something that you learn. Like, when you go to the WWE now in the Performance Center, they teach you WWE style, which is very different from other wrestling styles.
Yeah, it's for camera wrestling instead of the Shakespeare
like
360.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like porn versus sex. It's like porn is like, here's my vagina, and this is how I usually
this is
like.
The angle that
exactly.
I'm at. Yeah.
And it's also it was soft about at the bumps. Same time. The pacing is much slower. And then they started to introduce different wrestling styles when they brought people over from Japan and Mexico. Like, they started to introduce more dynamic styles of wrestling. And that also meant character-wise. Mm-hmm. People got to a bit spicier.
Yeah.
A little spice. A little spicy spice.
We got a lot of middle fingers from Mr. Stone Cold Steve Austin, which I was like, I'm seven. This is exciting.
I love him so much. He's
so good, yeah.
I can never figure out if he's my favorite.
You know, it runs very, very close for me and Sean. Me, Sean, and Stone Cold, I love very
much. I'm Mankind. Mankind is, by the way, yeah, you know what? Mankind, favorite. It's because
I'm with it.
Mankind is a man in a mask who lives in a basement and has a bunch of different personalities.
Boiler
he
room.
Pulls his own hair out boiler and he like, hits himself in the face. But the cool thing about him is that he's actually this wrestler, Mick Foley, who yes. has all these multifaceted characters. He has Dude
he
Love,
guys,
he has Mankind, he has Cactus Jack, and then he's Mick Foley. And Mankind was my favorite. When I was growing up, I had like a four-pronged a picture frame that had all of his personalities next to my bed.
Man, how would like, they not in SAG? I mean, look at the talent of somebody like Mick Foley,
sure.
who was like pulling out these different characters, and you were like, no, that's not Mankind. That's Cactus Jack.
Mick Foley, I think, is actually a really good example of what we're talking about because
yes.
he trained in Japan. When he was younger, he always wanted to be a wrestler, but he wanted to be in death matches. And death
hardcore,
matches are,
yeah.
yeah, hardcore matches. And so that's very, at the time, was very specific to Japan. Which they would have ladder matches, people would fall into piranha pits and literally get torn apart by piranhas, and they would pull them out like 4 seconds later, they're bleeding all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mick Foley lost an ear in the ring.
Sure did. So like he was like, I'm gonna go to Japan, I'm gonna learn death matches, I'm gonna be as tough as I can because I'm not a body guy. And like that's a thing. Like
yep.
you're big guy, you're small guy, you're body guy. He was none of those things. He was a normie dude. And so he did this, and then he comes to the WWF at the time, and
his thing was, I could take a beating.
He completely yeah. annihilated. He was the one who always jumped off the cages before Shane.
Yeah, before yeah. Shane
doing it.
That,
and
that
I think
Shane McMahon, by the way.
Another important thing which happened, which is also part of the reason why some of these smaller dudes were getting a shot, there was very famously a case where they had to go in front of, was it Congress? What did they, but
oh,
they had
yeah,
to,
that's right.
because of all the steroid stuff.
Oh, right.
and so that is when, all right, so we're going to take it to a concept called kayfabe. Now, this is what
oh,
we
yes,
talk about when
please,
we talk
yeah.
about carny talk. So kayfabe, again, when we talk about these carny concepts, when people used to say, you know, there was that whole thing of, well, you know, wrestling is fake, right? You know, wrestling is fake, right? It sounds weird to say, but wrestling sold itself as being real.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why that's, you know, when you hear words like mark, that is very much a con artist's term, because back in
yeah.
the carny days, people would take bets and whatever, and they didn't realize that it was a show and all these dudes are friends. And so in the 80s, kayfabe was very huge. If your best friend was a heel, AKA the bad guy, and if you were a face or baby face, AKA the good guy, you couldn't travel together.
Mm-mm.
You couldn't be seen together because they protected kayfabe so heavily.
And they still do this with the traveling too.
And wasn't it the Montreal Screwjob that kind of like brought kayfabe?
That was part of it. But before then, it was the steroid scandal where Vince
oh, yes.
McMahon had to go in front of. And again, I'm blanking on. I know it was a governmental entity. And
FCC,
that
no, wasn't oh no, wasn't
no.
the FCC? That was the.
But
I'm
so
blanking as well.
So he wound up having to go in front of them because there were all of these steroid whatevers and he was still being treated like a for real sport. And that's kind of when the mask began to drop on kayfabe.
Yes.
Because you can't say, well, I'm not in charge of what these wrestlers do. And also, this isn't really a sport unless you admit that it's not really a sport. If you're going up in front of, you know, whatever,
yeah.
sports and gaming commission he had to go in front of.
And that's mm-hmm. why they're so adamant about calling it sports entertainment and calling
oh.
them exactly and calling them sports entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever hear like I think there's compilations on YouTube of people accidentally saying wrestler and then you can hear like Vince screaming
oh,
in their ear
so
like somebody
upset.
On the mic accidentally saying wrestler and then you can hear Vince screaming in their ear and they're like sports entertainer.
Yeah.
yeah,
that
but it's
live
legal.
And die by Vince's terminology.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we mentioned the Montreal Screwjob, and I'm kind of blushing over because I was like, Shawn Michaels is my favorite. Ooh, let's. Mm.
Yeah. Ooh, bad
so,
boy.
So the Montreal Screwjob was an incident that happened. obviously Montreal. What year was it, Daniel? Do you happen to know the exact year?
I want to say it was 97.
Yes. Yeah, so yeah. So
it was a little later.
There was a buildup between a match between Bret Hart of the Hart Foundation and Shawn Michaels.
It was like in 1997. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Keep that. So they, so there was this big culmination of they're supposed to fight. And then the title, so Bret Hart was a champion during the time, and he did not want to drop the title to Shawn Michaels. But Shawn Michaels was really good friends with Vince McMahon, possibly a lover back then.
That's... And an important note to make on this was that Bret was getting ready to leave for their rival WCW. And Vince wanted him a classic way that you leave. You always go out on your back. You always go out losing. Mm-hmm. And so what Bret was prepared to do was lose, but he didn't want to lose in his hometown at WrestleMania. He was going to lose the day after. But because there was such a rivalry between them and WCW, recently their champions were doing something where, because, you know, WWE stuff was pre-taped, so someone you would see who had taped something 2 weeks ago would suddenly be on the rival channel at the same time. And then very famously, Alundra Blaze, aka Medusa, left WWE with her women's championship and threw it in the trash.
Yeah, she threw in the trash on the enemy program, you know, on this rival program on WCW. So this was the fear of Bret Hart leaving with the title. They didn't want him to take the title to WCW. They couldn't have that. So there was a deal made backstage, unbeknownst to Bret Hart. So Shawn Michaels goes in for the pin, and the referee counted very quickly.
Oh, Earl.
He put him in a submission, I think.
Put him in a submission, and he tapped. Oh, that's right. Yeah, he tapped. No, he tapped. Thank you. Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he put him in a submission, and he didn't tap.
He didn't tap, and he said he did.
He didn't tap, and then they were like,
that's what it was.
He was like, oh, he's out. And he was like, no. And you can see Bret Hart stand up and be like,
confused.
No, I didn't. I did not tap. And that did not happen.
And while that's happening, Shawn Michaels is hauling ass out of the ring, pretending like he has no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And they're throwing things at him, like, on the way out. Like, they're just, people are livid, because this is Bret Hart's hometown.
Yeah.
And Bret Hart spit directly onto Vince McMahon's face. Like, it was a loogie.
And then Bret Hart, you can go back and look at the footage. He spells out WCW.
Was it a sharpshooter did he did on him?
I think so.
Which is Bret Hart's finisher.
Yeah, yeah, so he used his own finisher on Bret Hart make him tap out in his hometown.
Yeah,
and the most disrespectful thing he could have done.
Yeah, and then so Bret Hart went in the back, punched Vince McMahon right in the face.
Hell yeah.
Yep, punched him in the face. So,
and he finally, like, after many, many, many years, finally was inducted into the Hall of Fame this year.
Yeah.
So, like, thank God for that.
There's been a lot of animosity between the Hart family and WWE.
With good reason.
And so... Shawn Michaels is a reformed man now, but
by the way,
then,
just so you know, like, Bret Hart is the brother of the guy who we were talking about who died in the ring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's, the Hart family has not had it easy.
No. Mm-hmm. That pay-per-view Over the Edge, by the way, was the first pay-per-view that I would beg and beg my parents to buy me please, for $39.99, please, you know. Very first one that they bought for me and my brother. Ooh. And it was a long time after that until
never
we got
again.
Another pay-per-view.
I was so young that my dad, I can literally remember, and I talked to him about this like 2 years ago, and he was like, that's crazy that you remember that. But I can literally remember him saying, she'll never remember this. It's okay.
Oh my God.
So to get into this heartbreaking, super sad incident, at the time, Owen Hart, who, again, all of the Hart family, they are a family of wrestlers. Stu Hart runs what they call the Dungeon, where they train wrestlers. Wrestling is their family business. And so Bret, at this point, was gone. Owen was doing this weird gimmick called the Blue Blazer, where he pretended he was a superhero, but everyone knew he wasn't. So going into Over the Edge, they were going to have him come down on, not like a zip line, but on a...
it was like a platform.
Not a platform. It's, what's the name of it when they hook you in?
I don't know what the police.
Either the name when they hook you in to make you look like you're flying in like a show or something.
Yeah, like a harness.
Yeah, like a zipline harness thing. Yeah, okay. Shawn Michaels used to use them all the time as part of his big entrances. Yeah. And so the idea was he was going to come in, get unclipped, and do his match. At the last minute, and there are lots of different reasons why people have said, but my understanding is that at the last minute, because he was having problems getting unclipped, out of the system, they switched it to a different kind of system, and they did not test it.
Oh no!
So while he is coming down into the ring, The harness or whatever releases, he hits one of the ring posts and then falls into the ring and passes away. They take him out of the ring. They continue the pay-per-view.
What?
He is loved by everyone. No one has a bad thing to say about this man. All the boys in the back love him. He was known for being an incredible wrestler. He was known for being incredibly great at training and doing well by the new guys. He was known for his huge sense of humor and his ability to pull pranks, which is what they call ribs. The guys always rib each other in the back or whatever, because what are you going to do? You've got all that travel time. Be universally beloved figure. And the show goes on. At a certain point, Jim Ross has to announce that Owen has passed away, and everyone else is just doing their best to continue this thing. And the decision to continue the pay-per-view after that is one of, out of all of the things the McMahons have done, one of the most controversial. And if that can tell you.
Yeah.
Madness. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was really bad.
Yeah, those are
so that was all of our first pay-per-view. Yeah,
jeez.
Yeah, and we still watch.
Yeah,
and I thought it was, you know,
I thought it was part of it.
We thought I thought it was part of the show.
We thought it was kayfabe. Sure. We thought it was all part of the totally did.
Well, I was confused because when he fell, I was like, well, why isn't he coming back? Like, he's just not going to do.
And
like,
they quit it very, quit very quickly because they've got that they've got that delay. They're used to having to cut away from injuries and things. And so you don't see him, thankfully.
Yes.
You didn't see him actually hit anything. You saw
see him fall. Yeah.
You saw like a split second and then that was it. And they didn't show any shots of him in the ring.
Yep, thankfully.
Thank God.
Because that would have been burned in our memories forever.
I mean, the people there, and it was just silent.
It was like quiet.
Pay-per-view, just silent, you know? I mean, they can filter noise all they want.
Well, and they also weren't telling anyone who was there watching. They were not giving them updates. Yeah. They were giving the people watching at home updates
pay-per-view was cut at that point. I think the certain places, networks or whatever, not networks, but cable providers, I think decided to just not show it anymore.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, they didn't tell anyone in the arena because
showing on. Yeah.
So that was still a part of the Attitude Era.
Yes.
So I guess just wrapping up that's very morbid part of the era. Is there anything else before we move on to the next one?
Oh, so yeah, the Attitude Era is where you get your Stone Cold Steve Austins. It's where The Rock.
I do know 316.
That's right. 316. Well, Vince McMahon
Austin
was
316.
So Vince McMahon, amongst his behind the scenes role, he really became an evil character
because
of
the Montreal Screwjob.
Because he stepped into the line after that, and
this is when they really started to take stories that were leaking to the public, like this Montreal Screwjob, and writing it into the show.
Yeah.
So
And before that, Vince had been an announcer. He was like the announcer there, and they never talked about how he was the owner of the company and everything, because that was a way to be able to control the story. And then after that, he became the boss, evil boss.
Not
Mr.
only
McMahon.
Him, but his his children, Shane. His older child, like she didn't want any part of it. She wasn't right. She never showed on camera.
I don't think she's ever done anything. So, she's like that one Osborne daughter.
Lives in the pool house.
So there's
Smart.
I was about to say there's Kelly, and then Stephanie and Shane McMahon, who also became prominent characters. Shane McMahon embraced the Weasley, son of the owner character, and that's why Stephanie McMahon was kidnapped, quote unquote, by the Undertaker. This was a very insane storyline time.
Yeah, and exactly. So like this was the time when the shift started to happen from muscle, from brawn to more personality driven gimmicks. Yeah. And so like you moved away from like the very classic wrestling of like Bruno Sammartino, I said, and then you get to like the Ultimate Warrior and Hogan and like people who have strong characters, but their characters are just I am strong.
I'm big, yeah.
And
their work rates were terrible.
Very bad.
Work rate is what means like how much stuff you can actually do in the ring.
So, like two moves. Now what we see with the Attitude Era is still like an emphasis on the brawn, emphasis on the strong, but now we're getting these characters. They are seen as more like comedic, more comic relief.
It was more, I think, as weird as it was more marketed for kids. And we had D-Generation X, and you remember Suck It. You remember, you know, being told to suck it, you know, the crotch chop and everything that was during that same time.
My mom hated that. My mom hated that. She hated that. We were not allowed to do that in our house.
And the leader,
did it anyways.
One of the leaders of D-Generation X was Triple H, who ended up marrying Stephanie McMahon, both on camera. You know, supposedly he kidnaps her. He kidnapped her and married her in a drive-through Las Vegas chapel while she was passed out. So that happened. But they are actually married in real life and are a big duo in the company that we kind of champion Triple H because he's you know the son-in-law of Vince McMahon, but has his own ideas and brings in a lot of the people that we love into the company.
We have to take a really quick break. We're going to come back, jump into more of wrestling, and also kind of just get into how now wrestlers are even able to join the WWE, like what that process is.
Oh, wow.
Right after this. And we're back. I'm still joined by Rachel, Danielle, and Janelle. And I just love watching how excited y'all get when you talk about it. Those are my favorite guests to have are people that are so passionate about it. It's like, oh no, I just got to tell you the tea about this. Like I have so much tea on this. I just, I can see your eyes light up when you talk about it. You're just all so.
That's how Tights and Fights kind of came about. Is that, you know, Danielle started a Facebook group and then we were all just so excited to be there and talk to each other. And we would have meetups and stuff.
And then that was before she started.
Yeah, I know. I haven't been a good mommy on that.
I miss that Facebook group when it was like 10 people.
Exactly. Yeah. When we were cool back then.
Yeah. Right. And so we did. And so I wound up getting the podcast. And so now we have a different Facebook group that is not, because mine was very specifically like, I want my industry buds and me to have a safe place where we can talk about wrestling. Yeah.
So we're moving into the PG era.
Yeah.
So what exactly, I mean, was this to market more, to be more, and reality? Like, so I imagine they're trying to pull non-traditional wrestling fans.
This was
fans.
For advertisers be okay with your product.
It got bad.
There were boycotts.
Yeah.
I think Coke for a while, it was either Coke or Pepsi, one of the big ones, they took their support off. They were having a really hard time getting people to actually, like, getting advertisers on the show.
And this was around the time, too, that they started to have a new emphasis on merchandising. And so, like, they knew that kids were buying merchandising. And so they were like, okay, well, we have to pivot here.
Was that also around the time? Was that also around the time they went public? I can't remember.
Yes, that's when they went public. Yeah, that's very smart. Yeah, that's when they went public. And so there was, like, a lot of pressure. Honestly, they pushed it. Yep. With the Attitude Era. They pushed it to a degree that was like, this is on TV and my kid can't watch it. It's on a primetime spot. My kid can't watch it. So we're going to have to reel it in.
Yeah, put a real content change there.
Yeah, for sure. And I wonder how much of that was Linda.
And that's
Linda McMahon, yeah, she's in politics.
Yeah, that's actually a really important point because she was getting hammered when she was trying to run for office in Connecticut because people were like, how are you, what is this trash that you're putting on? And I do believe, even if it's just a little bit, that has something to do with them suddenly going PG, is that she has always had, she's always wanted to be involved in politics, and they're realizing like, oh, well, we can't be the show where, and I wish this was fake, we can't be the show where our son-in-law is pretending to have sex with a dead body and then comes up with a handful of meat.
Yes.
We can't be that show.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and she's currently in Trump's cabinet, by the way.
Small business.
Small business. Unbelievable.
So in March of 2002, they decided to kind of separate their rosters and they put wrestlers on two different shows. Yeah. Like, what happened?
They wanted
there?
People to watch different shows and have incentive to watch. Because you had SmackDown was on UPN at the time, I believe, and then Raw was always, it's always been on, well, on USA.
Sometimes it's always been on cable.
Cable, yeah, at least cable. So UPN was, you know, that was a channel that we all got, you know, with just the antennas, you know. So I think that they wanted to give people different things to watch, but more incentive to watch, you know, if you want to see your wrestler, The Rock. The Rock was really the one who, coined kind of SmackDown.
Yeah, SmackDown was part of one of his 28 catchphrases.
SmackDown. He had so many.
He's so good.
One of them was just about how much he likes to eat lady bits.
Yeah, sure was. So they like literally named a brand after him because it's, I mean, again, diversification of income. And now we're seeing like this new era kind of ushered in by The Rock, who was literally called the people's champion.
Yeah.
So he like he encouraged a new audience.
So he brought in and he sort of shepherded new people into SmackDown. I think he actually brought up John Cena. I want to say that he, the John Cena, didn't he have, what was John Cena's first story besides him being the prototype after that?
Yeah, his first thing was when he came in and interrupted Kurt Angle they had their little, Kurt Angle, who is actually an Olympic champion, who then became one of the best and most popular and most hilarious wrestlers of all time.
And he is the father of... He's such a dad.
He's such a dad.
He looks like he's always about to cry. And he also looks like one of those thumb people from Spy Kids.
Yes. Yeah. That's a new development.
Yeah, because he used to not have, he used to have hair. And then they cut his hair because they wanted him to stop being the oh, geez, guys, stop messing with me guy. They made him more, because they turned him, I think, at that point. And so he's kind of cut the hair off since then. But this was the Ruthless Aggression era. This is the, you know, when we have the Randy Ortons coming in, Randy Orton, Batista. So this was
Big Dave Batista, also known as, give me a name, I'm blanking on it
Drax?
Right now. Drax, thank you.
The Destroyer.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah.
It's so crazy that he was able to hop over. So cool.
I love when wrestlers.
I mean, same obviously with The Rock, but like, I mean, been able to really. It just goes back to them being entertainers, right?
Because
Being able to captivate large audiences.
And John Cena now is becoming
Cena too.
He's become,
and comedic, like, you know, he's
being
in,
a host now. He's like a host. He's like, he was filling in for Ellen. Like, that's wild.
Yeah. And he's in Blockers and,
Bumblebee, which he was great in. So there was those eras, and then they became, and we got to kind of condense some of this.
Yep.
We became the reality era, which is especially with the rise of social media. Again, knowing that we're starting to get to a point where the fans are starting to know and get more backstage rumors. Yeah. We kind of know
smart
what's going on.
Smart marks.
Internet and so now marks. They started playing with, well, what is real and what is kayfabe?
And they have reality shows. What are we going to show you?
Yeah, what is real? And one of the big things out of that era was a wrestler called CM Punk did what is known as the pipe bomb. Which is, so in interviews, one of the terms for when a wrestler is doing a real interview where they're really talking and it's not kayfabe, they call it a shoot interview. And so pipe bomb was something that was...
He
worked himself into a shoot. Well, it's also a worked shoot in that it was meant to seem like it was real. Mm-hmm. And he peppered it in with, you know, he basically comes in, sits down. He sits down over by, I guess, the Titantron, whatever they call it now. He sits on the ramp with a microphone in his hand, and he just starts going off about how dumb the company is, about how he is going to leave because the company is really stupid.
And they don't
name-dropped other companies
Yeah, you just don't acknowledge them at all, but he was name-dropping, I believe, Ring of Honor.
I'll go back to Ring of Honor.
And so he was so convincing, because he's still one of the best talkers, he was so convincing that ESPN covered it. Real sports folks were like, is this guy just suddenly going off on WWE and blah, blah, blah? And so that really worked. And in fact, I had been taking a break from wrestling because there weren't really any great women during a lot of
the Ruthless Aggression era, a few of us, because I did the same thing. You kind of check out because you're like, oh, Stone Cold's gone.
I took a break around 2004.
Yeah. Around then.
And then I came back with CM Punk.
Yeah, the product wasn't great. The way they treated their women was abysmal. And so there was just nothing really in it for me. There was no Chinas, you know?
Yeah.
And so I came back with CM Punk and the pipe bomb because I was like, oh, if you can trick Jim Rome, I want to see what's going on here.
Well, I'm such a mark. Like, I am so easy to trick. It's so funny because you would think that, like, with all the people that I know who work in the WWE, that I would have some understanding of what's real and what's not. And I do not. Like, I will text people. I will watch Raw and then text somebody, are you okay? And they're like, yeah, dude, I'm okay.
Yeah.
So, like, this pipe bomb thing blew my mind.
It's insane.
Because, I mean, I was pretty young, but I was also, like, this is it.
You can still go back on it and get chills like now.
But I
like,
also learned about that pipe bomb. That pipe bomb promo, if you want to call it that. I learned about other promotions from that. Like, that was the first time I'd heard of Ring of Honor. Mm-hmm. And New Japan.
For a lot of people, it was, yeah.
Yeah, so that was really exciting.
Yeah, and so they started doing more of that. Wrestlers were starting to get their own social media channels, and some of them learning what they can and cannot do on there. And so that is what brought us to, like I said, that kind of reality.
Yeah, where we get Total Divas, which is a show of, you know, just the women, you know, the glamour of being a woman, female wrestler. And now...
Which, by the way, can you tell me some of the iconic women that are in this...
Today or ever.
Organization, ever.
China.
Yeah, China.
Trish Stratus, Lita.
Lita. Yeah, I believe
Lita
I brought
did
her.
Flips, like a lot of flips, and that was not what women did back then.
Yeah, she was really great at doing
and
those hurricanranas.
And she wore like pants, like she was like cool.
She was
you know,
a hardy
I remember
boy, yeah.
seeing her when I was a kid, and I was like, oh, I can be that.
We all wanted to be that because she was relatable. She was, you know, Trish Stratus was the opposite, where she's kind of that 90s porn look, but still was a
dope,
badass woman. Yeah. She Sable. Her and Lita, those
Medusa.
Two, they worked each other so well because, you know, you had that storyline going between them. So that was fantastic. But today we have
amazing wrestlers.
Yes. And
amazing.
So, but one thing I do want to touch on, we won't have time to get into it, but if you're ever interested, Joshi wrestling in the 90s, women wrestlers in Japan. If you ever get a chance to look some of those up, some of those moves are so good that dudes were stealing their movesets. Yeah. So anyway, that's just something that's really good. But right now, we are in an era where women's wrestling is the best I think it's been.
Ever been.
We've lost the term divas now. In WWE, they're now just superstars, the same as the male. There's now a female tag team division, which didn't exist before because there was only tag team for men, you know, men. And we have Sasha Banks, we have Bayley, we have Becky Lynch, who is known as the man right now, which is
she's holding two belts.
She's holding two titles.
Becky two belts.
Two belts.
And like I do have to say too, if you are just a fan of WWE and you're listening to this, I feel like a couple putovers is very important. So like Jordan Grace. Check her out.
Yes.
Taya Valkyrie, please check her out. Yep. Tessa Blanchard from the Blanchard Dynasty, please check her out. So like, do you know, if you're not finding what you need within the WWE, which I find to be impossible, because if you're not finding what you need on the main brands, check out NXT. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Kairi Sane. Did she get called up?
She got called up.
We did,
oh, but you know what? That is a great, that's a good segue because that was something that we wanted to talk about is how people actually get into the WWE these days.
True.
And so there is something called the Performance Center now where they have their own basically big gym.
In Florida.
And some people come in because they are recruited from other other sports and they'll say, I like your look. You come and do a tryout and see if you can be a wrestler.
College football players.
A lot of football players, a lot of Olympians. And then for some people, they are people who have gotten a good name or made a good name for themselves on the indies.
Yeah.
And so you
a lot of that these days, a lot of SoCal people coming in these days, like Matt Riddle, Ricochet.
Yep.
Like we're seeing a good amount of SoCal wrestlers, which I'm happy about because I think it's the best wrestling in the world.
PWG.
Yeah, that's right.
That stands for Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. It's one of the best independent wrestling shows ever. It happens once a month. It's impossible to get tickets.
Yeah.
So NXT is the brand where if you get good enough, it happens Wednesdays. They're pre-taped. If you get good enough, that's where they train you to start being able to be on TV. And so that is, you know, you start getting onto NXT, you start getting TV time, you learn how to really be on TV. And that is... the next step towards getting drafted onto the main roster, which is either on the SmackDown roster or the Raw roster.
And this is new because like what they're not just teaching them the, like I said earlier, the WWE style. They're not, because a lot of people have to unlearn things.
Yes.
Like Ricochet, when he came in, he had to unlearn how to physically
hurt somebody.
Yeah, because when you look at these indies, like these people are killing each other.
Yep. Right.
If you look at New Japan, these people are hurting each other.
Yeah, there's even a style called strong style, you're gonna feel it.
I'm gonna knee you in the face, and that's what's gonna happen because it's gonna look fake otherwise. But they have to unlearn that. And it is a skill. But on top of that, they're also getting mic skills. Like they're getting developmental skills. They come in and they pitch characters. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like an interesting creative space. Yeah.
And important to note that Triple H is actually the one in charge of NXT and was one of the people that pushed a lot of people, a lot of the independent people on there. And that's why we sort of appreciate how he's championed these people that we admire so much from the indies like Ricochet. Because one of the big things is that they can actually keep their name now. Before they would come in and we're like, Chris Hero, we're changing your name to Cassius Ohno. And it's like, oh, that's not good for my brand, but okay. So now Ricochet is Ricochet. And so that's the feels yeah. good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is nice. I don't know how he did that.
There's literally so much to cover yep. with this. Yep. If y'all are down, I would love to have you come back on because I know we didn't even get to talk about our friends that are in it, yeah. you yes. know, yeah. which is, it was great though, because this is an introduction to talk about the history of where it came from. I'm very aware, listener, that we might not have touched on your favorite wrestler. It's very obvious these women are extremely educated on this and probably know your favorite wrestler. So feel free to tweet at us and let Please. Us know kindly and be like, oh, this is my favorite or this is my, you know, my first memory. But if you're going to say you left out this, I can guarantee that they already know it backwards and forwards. And it was my fault for having to cut our time because we have to record after this because we love y'all and we're trying to do our best getting you everything possible that you want. I would love for you all to come back though so oh, we can sure. talk about some of the culture and the yeah. future.
Women of wrestling. That would be
women
fun.
Of wrestling and yeah, just what it currently looks like yep. now and how social media has so affected fun. All of that. Thank you all for coming
Thank you.
On.
Thank you.
Janelle, where can everyone catch you?
At Janelle Santa Cruz is my social media name on everything. On Tuesdays, actually, after this episode comes up, I will be on, I do a show on HyperRPG, twitch.tv/HyperRPG, called Blood Curling Tales of Terror, where it's an 80s RPG and it's a horror thing. And we're actually, it's Blood Curdling Tales in Time. Now, so we're time traveling. I play Miss Leanne Hamilton. That's a good time. And so,
yeah, I used to, from the South,
I'm from Texas.
I love when I can Texas. Break out my Texas accent.
We're all Texas.
And then, yeah, extreme
oh, yeah,
and stuff.
You're
so,
from
yeah.
Houston. Yeah. Right?
Oh, you guys are both from Texas. Ooh, girl.
I'm from both.
Where are you from, yeah. Danielle?
I'm from Seattle. I'm boring.
hey, it's all good.
Yeah, Danielle, where can everyone catch you?
Yeah, you can find me just on my social media. My Twitter is Danielle Radford. You can find me on Instagram at Danielle_Radford. Again, my podcast, Tights and Fights, on the Max Fun Network comes out every Thursday where we recap wrestling, but and then I make lots of jokes about it that are inappropriate, saying things like, work me, daddy, or cut a promo on my which apparently is a thing that I do. You can also, if you like the honest trailers on Screen Junkies, I write those sometimes, so check them out so I keep getting paid. Bye.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, hi. You can find me all over the internet at Rachel Sam Evans or Rachel Same Vans. It depends on how your brain works. Mm-hmm. And yeah, well, that's, you know, you don't have to watch my stuff.
Yes.
That's fine.
We do.
You can, no, you don't. Whatever, guys. But you can find me literally at any wrestling show.
You truly are all over the place.
Yes. Yeah, if you are in Southern California, chances are I will be at the independent wrestling show happening that week. So come say hi, please.
I know you all are both such big fans of independent wrestling. Like, I feel like yeah. that's such yeah. a huge part of the community.
You gotta support.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm fan. At Ms. Danny Fernandez. Yeah, check us out on TeePublic. We have a bunch of merch. We're gonna add some wrestling merch. We'll add Ooh. Some wrestling merch Ooh. For this. So it's teepublic.com/nerdificent. Thank you again for joining us. We will do part two of this, I promise, because I feel like y'all have even more tea to educate me about.
Yep.
Ready for the spice.
We haven't even gotten into the like real spicy stuff.
I know. I'll have just an all tea episode, and that'll make people that don't watch wrestling will want to watch wrestling.
I'm going to get in trouble.
Like we always say, stay nerdy.